It's time to turn off the lights and turn on the dark.
Chilling tales for dark nights.
Good evening, listener, and welcome back to Chilling Tales for Dark Nights. I'm your host, Steve Taylor. Tonight's episode is about time. Not the kind that ticks forward in neat, predictable seconds, but the kind that slips, the kind that borrows from you without asking, the kind that leaves you wondering whether the life you're living was ever meant to be yours at all. Before we step into tonight's darkness, though, let's take a moment to catch up on what's happening here at Chilling Tales for Dark Nights. First, a quick reminder that Evil Idol 2025 is well underway. Round 2 is in full swing, and the competition is tighter than ever. Incredible performances are dropping regularly on our YouTube channel, and every vote counts. If you haven't been following along yet, now is the perfect time to jump in. Head over to YouTube, search Chilling Tales for Dark Nights, and be sure to subscribe and ring that notification bell so you don't miss a single performance, episode, or update. And while you're there, or wherever you listen, please consider following the show and leaving us a 5-star rating and review. It helps more than you know, and it ensures that more listeners can find their way into the dark with us. If you'd like to take your experience even further, we invite you to become a Chilling Tales for Dark Nights member. For just $7.99 a month or at a discounted annual rate, you'll unlock ad-free listening, early access to new episodes, exclusive bonus content, and full access to our premium archive. You can learn more and join us today at chillingtalesfordarknights.com. And don't forget to follow us on Facebook, X, Instagram, and TikTok, where we share updates, behind-the-scenes content, and exclusive announcements. Now then, what would you do if tomorrow wasn't guaranteed? Or worse, if it already belonged to someone else? Tonight's tale comes from a writer whose work consistently blurs the lines between horror, science fiction, and the strange spaces in between. Our story this evening was written by K.G. Lewis and is featured courtesy of our friends at Velox Books. This story appears in K.G. Lewis's collection, Flotsam and Jetsam, a collection of short horror, science fiction, weird, and unusual stories, available now on Amazon.com from Velox Books in hardcover, paperback, Kindle ebook, and audiobook formats. If you enjoy stories that feel like lost episodes of The Twilight Zone or The Outer Limits, tales where ordinary lives collide with extraordinary consequences, then you'll want to keep this collection close at hand. Tonight's story is performed by Olivia Steele, with production by Aaron Sawicki. So dim the lights, silence your notifications, and prepare yourself. We present Revolving Racks.
If you're good while we're in here, my mom pointed to the doors of the day's past vintage clothing store. We can go across the street and have ice cream when we're done, okay? My mom had a thing for old clothing, especially from the 60s and 70s. Most of the stuff in her closet was bought from some secondhand stores like the one we were standing in front of. She tried to dress me similarly, but it didn't last long. Once I'd started school, she realized she was torturing me by dressing me in a fashion that made the other kids single me out. Okay, I agreed. She was trying to bribe me because I had a bad habit of getting restless and running around the stores we shopped at, playing amongst the racks of clothing. According to her, whenever I did that, I was embarrassing her. My mom opened the door and motioned for me to walk inside, I mean it, Erica, she warned me as I walked past her into the store. No horsing around. I won't, I insisted. I had no intention of messing around. I really wanted some ice cream. However, based on past precedent, the chances of me behaving were slim. It wasn't for a lack of trying, though. I always tried to behave. My mom just took so long looking at everything in the store that my patience always wore out well before she was ready to leave. Welcome in, the older lady behind the counter greeted us. I love your shirt. She pointed at the My Little Pony t-shirt I was wearing. Thanks, I replied shyly while looking down at the cartoon characters printed on it. It's my favorite. Like all my clothes, the shirt was bought from a thrift store, so it was several years out of date. But I still loved it. Then I'd bet you'd probably like this too. She laid her arm on the counter so I could see the bracelet she was wearing. It had pink, purple, and white beads of various sizes and little charms of the six main characters from the My Little Pony cartoon series. I nodded. I did like the bracelet, very much. Which one's your favorite? I knew she was asking about the characters depicted on the charms. I pointed at the yellow Pegasus with the pink mane and tail. Her. Fluttershy's my favorite too. The lady winked at me when she saw the surprised expression on my face. My mom couldn't name the characters, so it was a surprise for me to hear this woman, who was at least 20 years older than her, name one of them. The lady slipped the bracelet from her wrist and held it out to me. I think you should have it. I looked back at my mom, who'd been silently watching the exchange between the lady and me. That's not necessary, my mom said. My mom assumed the lady was trying to guilt trip her into buying something by giving me something for free. It was a tactic used by a lot of secondhand stores we visited, but none of them had ever offered me anything as cool as that bracelet. It's no trouble, the lady insisted. It's not something I can sell in the shop. Please, Mom? I asked with a hopeful look in my eyes. Ever since my dad died, I didn't get a lot of presents. My mom couldn't really afford them outside of Christmas and my birthday, both of which were still months away. Fine, she sighed. I took the bracelet and put it on my wrist. Thank you. The lady smiled at me. It was my pleasure. As my mom and I walked away from the counter to start shopping, she leaned over and hissed at me. You better behave or I'm going to make you give it back. Do you understand me? I nodded my head, terrified at the thought of losing the bracelet. In the few seconds I'd had it, it'd become my most treasured possession. I glanced back toward the lady at the counter, wondering if she'd overheard the exchange. From the sad way she was looking at me, I figured she must have heard. Psst! I was sitting on a little stool at the back of the store, next to the rack of shoes, when I heard the sound. After looking around for a moment, I couldn't figure out where it was coming from. Over here! I looked around again and saw an arm waving at me from a circular rack full of pants. I got up and walked over to the rack. The girl who was trying to get my attention stuck her head out and looked at me. What's your name? She asked. She looked to be about my age. Erica, I replied. What's yours? Lori, the girl replied. Lori was doing what I would have been doing had my mom not threatened to take my bracelet away and promised me ice cream. There was a lot of fun to be had playing amongst the racks. It was hard to resist the allure of the hidden spaces behind the densely packed clothing. Is that the correct date? Lori asked, pointing at the television that was mounted on the wall. It was turned to a news channel, and the date was listed along the bottom of the screen, where various headlines of the day scrolled by. I guess it is, I shrugged. I had no reason to think it wasn't correct. Do you want to see something cool? Lori asked enthusiastically. I looked over at my mom, glad to see that she was too preoccupied with the large selection of shoes laid out before her to notice me. Sure, I agreed. Lori reached out and grabbed my hand, pulling me into the rack with her. Whatever you do, don't let go of my hand, okay? She had a serious tone in her voice. Okay. I tightened my grip on her hand as she led me out of the rack of clothing and into another.
"One more should do it,"
Lori declared, once again pulling me along as we left the confines of our current rack for a new one. When we stopped, she parted the jackets hanging around us and nodded toward the wall where the TV was mounted.
"Check it out," she said with a smile.
The flat-screen TV that had been there 5 minutes ago was gone. In its place was a much smaller and boxier-looking TV.
"Look at the date,"
Lori pointed at the screen where a different news channel was playing.
"June 13th, 1993.
I read the date out loud. The day was right, but the year was wrong.
1993 was...
It took my 8-year-old brain a moment to do the math.
30 years ago. "No, it wasn't," Lori declared. 1993 is right now.
I gave her a confused look.
"Go have a look around," she urged. "You'll see."
I stepped out from the rack and walked toward the back of the store where I last saw my mom. She was nowhere to be seen. Worried, I spun around, looking for her. That's when I noticed that the store looked different.
"Can I help you with something?"
the lady working behind the counter asked when she saw me looking around. She didn't look like the lady who had given me the bracelet. This new lady was much younger looking than her.
"I'm just looking for my mom," I replied.
The lady behind the counter also looked around. Not seeing anyone but me, she said, "I'm pretty sure your mom isn't here. I haven't seen anyone in the shop all morning besides the two of you."
"Do you believe me now?"
Lori whispered from her place in the rack. I didn't want to believe her, but I couldn't explain all of the things that had changed while we ran through the racks. There was one thing I could do to prove that I wasn't losing my mind.
"Excuse me,"
I turned back to the lady behind the counter.
"What's today's date?"
"June 13th, 1993, the lady replied.
1993?
Stunned, I just stood there, wondering how Lori had been able to bring me back in time 30 years.
"Are you okay?"
the lady asked. Lori darted out of the rack and grabbed my arm, pulling me into a different rack across the aisle.
"Come on," she said. "We need to get out of here."
"Wait," I heard the lady call out, but her voice sounded far away.
"We need to keep moving,"
Lori said, dragging me from one rack to the next.
"I want to go back,"
I said, meaning back to my time where my mom was.
"We will," Lori promised. "I just need to rest for a minute."
We had to stop in the middle of a rack of sweaters.
"How are you doing this?"
Lori shrugged.
"I don't really know. I was just playing in the racks one day and suddenly found myself in the future."
"Well, how do you get back home?"
"I thought about going home, and the path through the racks just sort of came to me."
She gave me an apologetic look, knowing that she wasn't offering much of an explanation.
"I can't explain it. I just think about where I want to go and follow the path I see. But I can only do it in this store."
She pointed at the floor.
"It doesn't work anywhere else. I've tried."
"Got you,"
someone cried out, thrusting their arms between the sweaters and grabbing a hold of me. I fought against the person, struggling to free myself as they dragged me out of the rack. Lori tried to help me, but whoever grabbed hold of me was stronger than the both of us combined. The person who grabbed me was a middle-aged woman. When she pulled me out of the rack, she turned me around to face her. That's when I saw the name tag pinned to her chest, telling me her name was Connie.
"Wait a minute," Connie said, momentarily stunned. "You're not her."
She looked me over for a moment as she released her hold on me.
"Have you seen a little blonde girl with pigtails, about your height and probably around your age?" she asked.
She was talking about Lori. I couldn't stop myself from flicking my eyes over to the rack where Lori was peeking at me between the sweaters. She was shaking her head and holding her index finger up to her lips, begging me not to say anything. But I didn't have to say anything. Connie had followed my gaze and saw Lori.
"There you are, you little thief!"
Connie blurted out, lunging for Lori. Lori took off running out of the sweater rack and into a rack of dresses across the aisle. After that,
I didn't see where she went, and neither did Connie. She's gone. I didn't know if she'd gone into the future or the past. All that I did know was that she was no longer in the clothing shop.
I tried the phone number you gave me, but it doesn't work, Connie said. Is there another one I can try?
I shook my head. I was pretty sure any phone number I gave her wouldn't work, since they all belonged to people I knew in the future. After Lori got away, Connie took me into the store's office to talk to me. She snapped off a series of rapid-fire questions, which I did my best to answer.
What's your name?
Erica.
Where's your parents?
I shrugged.
Who's that girl you were with?
Lori.
What's Lori's last name?
I shrugged again.
Do you know where she lives?
I shook my head.
Her phone number?
I shook my head again.
Is there anything you can tell me about her besides her name?
No, I just met her.
That's when Connie stopped giving me the third degree and softened her approach, offering to call my parents for me. If I can't get a hold of your family, I'm going to have to call the police, Connie said. You can't be running around down here unsupervised.
Overwhelmed, I started crying. Connie did her best to comfort me, but it was clear that she wasn't used to consoling children. The best she could do was hand me a tissue, put her hand on my back, and tell me everything was going to be okay. When it became clear to her that she wasn't going to be able to get any useful information out of me, she picked up the phone and called the police. I considered running out of the shop, but the more I thought about it, the more I realized it was a bad idea. If the little calendar on the corner of Connie's desk was correct, I was stuck in 1973. Once I was outside, I wouldn't know where to go. Nobody I knew would be alive. Well, that wasn't entirely true. My grandparents were alive, but I had no idea how to find them, or if they even lived in the area at the time. Plus, I doubt they'd believe me if I just showed up at their doorstep and said, "Hi, I'm your granddaughter from the future. Can you help me get back home?" Lori was my only hope, but I wasn't sure she'd come back for me. "I dropped my other bracelet," I lied, holding up my arm so she could see my empty wrist. "Can I go look for it?" Connie sighed heavily.
"I suppose," she said. "But you better hurry, the police will be here any minute."
She led me back onto the sales floor and stood close by, keeping an eye on me as I climbed into the center of the sweater rack Lori and I were in when we arrived.
"Lori," I whispered, "are you there?"
When I didn't get a reply, I stepped out of the rack and into the one I saw her disappear into when Connie was chasing her.
"Lori,"
I repeated. She never responded.
"Did you find it?" Connie called out.
"Not yet."
"I'll have to find my own way home," I decided. "If Lori could use the clothing racks to move through time, maybe I could too." I closed my eyes and pictured my mom standing in the shop, waiting for me back in 2023. Then I tried retracing the path Lori had taken, quickly moving from rack to rack, thinking about home the entire time. After running in and out of a few racks and seeing that nothing around me had changed, I gave up.
"No luck?"
Connie said sympathetically, seeing me step out of the rack with my head hung low. I shook my head, wiping away the fresh tears that rolled from my eyes. That was when the police arrived.
"Are you sure this is the address?"
the officer driving the cop car said.
"There's nothing here."
"I'm sure," I replied. "It just hasn't been built yet," I thought to myself. After questioning me about who I was and failing to get a hold of my parents from the store, the two police officers who arrived decided to drive me home. While we sat there on the side of the road next to the vacant lot that would one day become the site of the apartment complex where I lived with my mom, the officer in the passenger seat used the car's radio to contact the police precinct,
to see if anyone had reported me missing yet. Of course, nobody had, and nobody would. Not in 1973. Having no other choice, the police handed me off to a social services worker named Carol.
"Are you hungry, Erica?"
That was the first thing Carol asked me after introducing herself. I hadn't realized it until I thought about it, but I was starving. She took me to a McDonald's restaurant, which made me feel a little bit better. There was something familiar about the place that made me feel like I wasn't stuck in 1973.
"What would you like?"
Carol asked me when we reached the counter.
"A Happy Meal?"
I replied. That's what I always got when I went there with my mom.
"I'm not sure what that is," Carol said, "but I'm certain there's something up there that will make you happy."
She gestured at the menu. I scanned the available items, surprised to see no mention of a Happy Meal.
"I guess they don't have them yet." "I'll just have a cheeseburger and French fries."
When our food was ready, Carol let me pick the table we were going to sit at. While we ate, she asked me some basic questions about myself. Nothing too serious. I knew she was just trying to win me over before she started asking the difficult questions.
"Can I have some ice cream?"
I asked when I was done with the rest of my food. I had seen it listed on the menu, and it made me think about what my mom had said about getting me ice cream if I was good. I thought I deserved it at that point.
"I'll tell you what," Carol leaned forward. "I'll get you an ice cream cone if you promise to tell me the truth."
"Okay," I agreed. She got up and returned a few minutes later with the promised ice cream cone, along with a second for herself. We ate our cones in silence, and then Carol gathered up all of the trash and threw it away. When she returned, she sat down and said,
"All right, Erica. It's time to talk."
She pulled a notebook out of her purse and set it on the table. She flipped it open and turned it around so I could read what was written on the page before reaching back into her purse for a pen.
"This is the phone number and address you gave to the police."
She tapped the page with a pen. "But we both know that's not your parents' phone number or your address, is it?" I didn't know how to respond to that.
"I want you to write down your real address and phone number."
Carol set the pen down on the notebook.
"Don't forget, you promised to tell me the truth if I got you that ice cream cone." "That is my real address and phone number."
I kept my eyes on the notebook.
"They just don't exist yet,"
I mumbled.
"What do you mean they don't exist yet?"
I took a deep breath and then told Carol everything that had happened to me since I woke up that morning, leaving nothing out. I rambled quite a bit and had to backtrack a couple times, but I was pretty sure I didn't forget anything.
"That's the truth,"
I said when I had finished my story. The way Carol looked at me made me feel like a bug under a magnifying glass.
"That's quite a story."
It was clear from her tone that she didn't believe me.
"Do you have any proof?"
"No." I dropped my head and looked down at the table. Doing that brought the cartoon characters on my shirt into my field of view.
"I do have proof," I blurted out, getting to my feet and pulling on the hem of my t-shirt to straighten it out.
"I don't see how that's proof, Erica," Carol said.
"My Little Pony won't exist for decades,"
I insisted. "At least the version I was familiar with wouldn't be."
"Don't have any way of verifying that."
Carol had a sad look on her face. I dropped back into my chair and pouted.
"Nobody is ever going to believe me."
Before I'd finished that thought, I decided that the only way I was going to get back home was to return to the clothing store and wait for Lori to come back for me. She had to come back for me. She couldn't just leave me stranded there. I got up and ran out of the McDonald's restaurant before Carol could react. It took me a moment to orient myself once I was outside, but after I did, I knew exactly where I needed to go to get back to the shop. 15 minutes later, I stood in front of the clothing shop, panting.
"Please be here, Lori,"
I thought as I pushed the door open and walked inside. I did my best to stay out of sight, running into the rack of dresses that was nearest to the door. From there, I moved from rack to rack until I made it to the sweater rack that Lori and I were in earlier when we'd arrived in 1973. Then I sat down and waited. I was prepared to sit there as long as necessary, but I wasn't allowed to sit there that long. About 10 minutes after I arrived, Carol walked into the store. I watched from between the sweaters as she walked up to the counter and started talking to Connie. I couldn't hear what they were saying, but I knew they were talking about me. I also knew that I hadn't been as sneaky as I thought when Connie pointed at the rack that I was hiding in. Carol walked over and stood next to the rack. "I'm only trying to help you, Erica," she said softly.
"I know," I replied, "but I don't belong here. If you want to help me, let me stay here."
"You know I can't do that." I pulled my legs up to my chest and wrapped my arms around them.
"I'll tell you what," Carol said. "If I promise to let you sit here until the store closes, will you promise to come with me if nothing happens?" I thought about it for a moment. It sounded like a reasonable request, mostly because I'd convinced myself that Lori would come back for me.
"Okay," I agreed, "but you can't sit here with me." I didn't think Lori would return if there were adults around.
"I won't," Carol smiled. "Connie said I could sit in her office, but first I'm going to run over to the supermarket and pick us up some snacks. I'll be back soon. If you need anything while I'm gone, ask Connie."
She gestured over to where Connie was standing behind the counter. "She was nice enough to let us stay, so I expect you to be on your best behavior."
"Okay," I quickly agreed. I wasn't planning on doing anything except sitting there and waiting for Lori to come back and take me home.
"I'm sorry," Carol apologized. She was squatting on the floor next to the sweater rack while she talked to me. "I know you thought your friend was going to show up, but it's time for you to accept that she's not coming." Her words brought tears to my eyes. I was sure Lori would come back for me.
"It's time for us to go." Carol reached her hand out between the sweaters. "Connie needs to close up the shop."
I briefly considered asking if we could stay a little bit longer, but I knew Carol would say no. Plus, I doubted Lori would show up that late. She was probably already home in bed in whatever time she came from.
"Okay," I sniffled, taking Carol's hand and letting her help me out of the rack.
After we left the clothing shop, Carol drove me to a hospital. I didn't realize it was a mental hospital until we were locked inside.
"You'll only have to stay here for a couple of days," Carol promised before the nurse led me away. "They think I'm crazy."
From that moment on, I knew better than to talk about being from the future. I kept my mouth shut about it and decided to act like I couldn't remember anything. Whenever I was asked anything about myself, I just told the doctors and social workers that I couldn't remember anything other than my name. When they asked me why I made up that story about being from the future, I told them it was just a silly game me and Lori were playing while we were in the store. The doctors diagnosed me with something called retrograde amnesia, an inability to remember things from my past. As long as they didn't treat me like a crazy person, I was fine with that. They kept me locked up for a month before they transferred me to a group home for children. Since no next of kin could be found and nobody had come forward to claim me, I was considered a ward of the state. That meant Carol would act as my guardian in all legal matters until I turned 18. The first few months at that group home were rough. The other kids weren't that nice, and everything around me felt so archaic. Back in 2023, I was used to being surrounded by all sorts of gadgets and gizmos to entertain myself. Without having that stuff in 1973, I grew bored easily. And when I got bored, I did stupid things, like running away.
I ran away from the home 3 times, and every time I did, I went back to the shop to look for Lori. And every time, Connie would let me stay for an hour or so before she called Carol and told her to come and get me. After the 3rd time I ran away, Carol had me transferred to a different group home, one that was several hours away from the shop. But that didn't stop me from trying 1 more time to get back there. As time passed, I eventually gave up the idea of going home and started settling into a routine. After a few years of good behavior, I was placed in a foster home until I turned 18. The week after my 18th birthday, I packed up all my stuff and moved back to the town where the clothing shop was. Carol was resistant to the idea, thinking it wouldn't be good for me to go back there. But I assured her I was fine. That would be the last time I saw her. A few weeks after helping me get settled, she passed away. The year was 1983. That June, I returned to the clothing store. When I walked through the doors, Connie, who was in her 50s now, recognized me immediately.
"You're a little big to be running through the clothing racks these days, aren't you?"
She smiled. I returned the smile. "I'm sorry about all of that." She brushed aside the apology with a wave of her hand and stepped out from behind the counter.
"Come here,"
she motioned, wrapping her arms around me when I got close enough.
"I'm just glad to see you're all right."
"Thanks."
"What brings you back here?"
"Well," I said, turning my head to look over at the help wanted sign in the window. "I was thinking I might apply for the job, if that's all right with you."
"Seriously?" Her smile grew. "You're hired."
She walked over to the window and removed the sign. I worked in the store for 10 years, always keeping an eye out for Lori, but no longer hoping she'd take me back to 2023. During that time, I'd gotten married, had a couple of kids my own, and was content with my life. Wouldn't change anything about it even if I could. It was June 13th, 1993, when Lori reappeared in the shop. When I saw her, I was surprised to see she wasn't alone. I was also with her. Or, rather, my younger self was. Seeing the two of us step out of the clothing rack gave me a feeling of déjà vu. "Can I help you with something?" I asked my younger self.
"I'm just looking for my mom," younger me replied.
The thought to tell her that her mom was back in 2023 and that she should turn around and go right back to her crossed my mind, but I couldn't bring myself to say it. I was happy with the way my life had turned out, and the thought of losing my 2 beautiful children made me hold my tongue. I didn't know what would happen if that version of me didn't end up in 1973, and I didn't want to risk it. "I'm pretty sure your mom isn't here. I haven't seen anyone in the shop all morning besides the two of you," is what I said instead.
"Excuse me," younger me asked, "what's today's date?"
"June 13th, 1993," I replied, giving her the day's full date since I knew she really just wanted to know what year it was.
"1993?"
Younger me just stood there, stunned.
"Are you okay?"
I asked. Lori darted out of the rack and grabbed the arm of younger me, pulling her back into a rack, saying something that I couldn't hear as they fled.
"Wait!"
I called out, suddenly having second thoughts about letting them leave, but it was too late. They were already gone. The last time I saw Lori was also the first time. It was June 13th, 2023, the day my mom and the younger version of me walked into the store for the first time. I was ready for them this time.
"Welcome in," I said when they walked into the shop. "I love your shirt."
I pointed at the My Little Pony shirt younger me was wearing.
"Thanks," she replied. "It's my favorite."
"Then I'd bet you'd probably like this too." I laid my arm on the counter to show her the My Little Pony bracelet I was wearing. The one I had purchased just for this occasion. Younger me nodded.
"Which one's your favorite?"
I asked her. She pointed at the yellow Pegasus with the pink mane and tail.
Her.
Fluttershy's my favorite, too. I winked at her before slipping the bracelet off my wrist. I think you should have it. Younger me looked back at our mom to make sure it was okay to take the bracelet.
That's not necessary, our mom said.
It's no trouble, I insisted. It's not something I can sell in the shop. Connie had passed away in the late 90s and left the store to me. Since that time, I'd made a few changes to the business. The most notable one was changing the store's focus to vintage clothing instead of just selling secondhand clothing.
Please, Mom?
Younger me begged.
Fine, our mom sighed.
Younger me took the bracelet and put it on her wrist.
Thank you.
I smiled. It was my pleasure. A short while later, our mom rushed up to the counter in a panic.
Have you seen my daughter?
She blurted out. I have, I replied.
Where?
She practically shouted at me.
Where is she?
I dragged a chair out from behind the counter and set it near her.
I'll tell you, I said. But I think you're going to want to sit down first.
You've just heard Revolving Racks, written by K.G. Lewis, performed by Olivia Steele, with production by Aaron Sawicki. It's a story about time, not as a gift, but as a transaction, about what happens when life continues forward, even after it should have stopped, and the quiet price we pay for being allowed to stay. This unsettling tale comes from K.G. Lewis's latest collection, Flotsam and Jetsam, a collection of short horror, science fiction, weird, and unusual stories, available now on Amazon.com from Velox Books in hardcover, paperback, Kindle ebook, and audiobook formats. As the Undead editor Elijah Hall puts it, quote, "If you enjoy The Twilight Zone and The Outer Limits, you'll love K.G. Lewis," unquote. And that comparison couldn't be more fitting. Within these pages, you'll encounter stories where a father spends years chasing a mysterious funhouse where his son has vanished. A man discovers the horrifying truth that humanity is considered cattle by an ancient malevolent race. A simple trip to the voting booth becomes a nightmarish burden when the outcome determines mankind's apocalyptic fate. And much, much more. So, do yourself a favor and pick up Flotsam and Jetsam, a collection of short horror, science fiction, weird, and unusual stories today on Amazon.com. You won't regret it. Before we part ways tonight, let's take just a moment for a few final reminders. If you enjoyed tonight's episode, please remember to follow the show and leave us a 5-star rating and review wherever you listen. It's one of the easiest ways to support what we do. Be sure to subscribe to Chilling Tales for Dark Nights on YouTube, where you'll find full episodes, exclusive content, and ongoing coverage of Evil Idol 2025, including contestant performances and updates. And if you'd like to experience Chilling Tales without ads, plus gain early access, exclusive bonuses, and our premium archive, visit ChillingTalesForDarkNights.com and become a member today for just $7.99 a month. You can also follow us on Facebook, X, Instagram, and TikTok to stay connected and up to date on everything we have coming your way. Time as a way of taking what it's owed, sometimes all at once. Sometimes one quiet moment at a time. Until next time, turn off the lights and turn on the dark. Sweet dreams, listener. Sweet dreams.